And we're back, the Taylor Report, CIAT. And again, I'll just say facebook.com/the Taylor Report. And of course, we're also at taylor-report.com. And I left out one item. It's going to be, I think it'd be very interesting. February 16th at 7 p.m. Tuesday. There's going to be a talk at Betsatoon. That's betsatoon.org. The Ottawa shootings that led to Bill C-51. There's going to be a presentation by Professor Graham McQueen, McMaster University, and that's he's going to be talking about how that was incident was linked to this onerous legislation. And that's February 16, 7 p.m. at Betsatoon. And by the way, I should mention that they ask for $5 to $10. They're flexible on that. I believe we're joined now by the executive director of Black Agenda Report, Mr. Glenn Ford. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I'm here. How you doing?
Very good, and I'm very glad to be talking to you. Black Agenda Report has been focused on a number of issues. I hope people go to that site. But I want to start off with the subject of Burundi, because, I like your coverage of that. I think it's very important. In December, there was a sort of a precipitous decision, and I never quite understood how that occurred, where the African Union said that they were going to send 5,000 troops to enter Burundi and to protect civilians. The Burundian government said, wait just a second. We would consider that an invasion. Then there was another little chapter where Samantha Powers, the United Nations representative of the United States, she came to Burundi, and I want to ask you about that episode. But then this weekend, something kind of funny happened to this great humanitarian regime change express. It seemed to come to a bit of a halt in Addis Ababa. What is going on here? What does Ms. Power and the United States want out of this?
Well, we know what they want. They want to control the world, but I guess that's not sufficient an answer.
No, that's a ballpark.
But what I guess the question is really, why is the African Union, which at least would style itself as being part of the legacy of Kwame Nkrumah's dream of United Africa with its own institutions, why would an African Union be carrying out the foreign policy of the United States and European powers? Mm-hmm. And the reason that they agreed, of course, to field an invading army of a non-threatening member state is because the African Union does not pay its own bills, its so-called peacekeeping operations, including, of course, the biggest one in Somalia, are financed by the United States and Europe. Mm-hmm. And the financiers call the shots, and they initiate the invasion.
Mm-hmm. Now, this episode on the weekend, it strikes me that something is some turbulence going on, and where African states are beginning to dig in their heels a bit. It was highly embarrassing, I think, for certainly the U.S. and for Ms. Power and others, that they basically backed down from this threat.
Well, the one thing that we can count on these imperialists to do is overplay their hand and reach too far. Mm-hmm. So that even though their financial backing and the subversion that they have accomplished with most of the militaries of Africa through the AFRICOM strategy has been quite effective, even folks who are willing to play the stooge do have some sense of self-respect, and they do have constituencies, and sometimes they even say, back off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, rather a remarkable situation. By the way,
I would think that Tanzania has been working hard to diffuse this situation, to put out this match that Samantha Power and her crowd were trying to light.
Mm-hmm. I notice also, even in Kenya today, the opposition, the one that agreed that Mr. Kenyatta ought to go to the International Criminal Court, they are saying that the AU is failing its duty. And they're also complaining that at the AU, they talked about this International Criminal Court, suggesting that the states begin to make a decision, basically, to pull out of the ICC. By the way, do you think, does this have something to do with what's going on in the Security Council with Russia and China?
You know, Pan-Africanism may not be a powerful force these days on the African continent. But nationalism still is quite potent. And once populations understand that they're being treated as less than full members of the game, they react. And so I think we'll continue to see a pushback against the ICC and eventually against AFRICOM as well. The problem, and this is especially the problem with AFRICOM, is that these African militaries have become dependent upon U.S. funding, U.S. Training, on the hope of somehow getting a leg up in the world through fraternization with U.S. military personnel. So it's a masterful strategy that they've come up with to not create a system of big U.S. bases in Africa, but to make virtually every African military base an AFRICOM base. Mm-hmm. But there will be pushback, and I think that's what you're noting.
Yeah, it's certainly striking. Now, this is Glenn Ford of Black Agenda Report. Could you talk about, I'll just put it this way, President Nkurunziza of Burundi, when they came to see him, he said, are you going to do any investigating of the criminal government of Rwanda who is organizing and arming and training people to attack me? Could you talk about what Rwanda's role is, and is there something to Mr. Nkurunziza's concern?
Well, Rwanda is a prime hitman of the United States. Kagame's government would not exist if the United States did not labor mightily to bring it about. But Kagame creates some problems, especially in the realm of public relations for U.S. policy in Africa, because Kagame does not understand the skills of public relations and seems to derive some of his leadership mystique internally from being a bully and a swaggering dictator. So there are frictions there, and Kagame often becomes an embarrassment for the U.S. I expect that Samantha Power and her colleagues spend almost as much time trying to soften the edges of Kagame as they do trying to bribe and browbeat other African heads of state.
Yeah, he is a public relations disaster wherever he goes. I notice it. His stock seems to be falling. Lastly, on this whole matter, can you comment on this International Criminal Court and why African states have an issue with it?
Well, they have an issue with it for the same reasons that any decent folks would have an issue with it. The ICC was conceived, and certainly its history has shown that its purpose is to keep Africans in line, to extend the reach of U.S. imperialism into the judicial sphere, and to get Africans to go along to sanction this new wrinkle on neo-colonialism. But it's difficult for politicians in Africa to play the game of being savior of the nation when they are so obviously in the service of other nations and not their own. And that's why the ICC, which certainly never had broad popular support, is finding it difficult to marshal the misleaders of Africa in a solid phalanx.
Maybe it's an awkward segue, but I was saying earlier in the show that when we consider some of the situation in the United States that and we talk about place in connection with their foreign policy, that the domestic policy is foreign policy. The treatment of the people of Flint, and your website has really been focused on this, and the dismissal of, well, the destruction of democracy for Black Americans, it makes a natural segue, treatment of Africa, treatment of Flint. Could you talk about what is going on in Flint and the removal of basic freedoms for Americans and how they manage that?
Well, I'm sure that your audience and much of the world knows that the source of water for the 100,000 residents of Flint, Michigan, was poisoned. And they probably know that it was poisoned not through the actions of the local government, but by a decision of a local emergency financial manager appointed by the governor of Michigan as a dictator over Flint. What they may not know is that the same governor has put every Black or heavily Black city in Michigan under an emergency financial manager, a dictator who doesn't have to answer to the people. So the crime against humanity in the poisoning of the water of Flint is really rooted in a crime against democracy and a very racially selective crime against democracy in Michigan, the disenfranchisement of the Black population there. And although it's not as dramatic in other states as to result in the poisoning of tens of thousands of children, that same crime against democracy has been underway in cities across the United States with the takeover of public schools. These state takeovers of public schools only occur when those schools become majority Black and brown. They've never occurred in majority white districts. And there seems to be some kind of tipping point where democracy must cease to exist, must be withdrawn once the people who are exercising their democratic rights get too Black. And I think much of the world is getting a renewed education on the actual nature of the United States through being a witness to the Flint experience. But that's just the most dramatic aspect of the whittling away of democracy, starting with Black folks. That has become a juggernaut in the last 10 years.
Yeah. Yes, and I guess we can't resist the irony here. We remember when the man saying he was going to bring hope was elected, and everyone said, well, we've turned a corner, and Black-white relations in America, et cetera, because now we have a Black president. This is, I know your website has covered this extensively and brilliantly, but
it's very, very, very sad. The Democrats are always posturing that they are the defenders of the Black franchise in the United States, and they charge correctly that the Republicans are constantly trying to water down the Black vote through all kinds of voter ID tests and such. But in Michigan, half of the Black population was rendered effectively voteless. And the Democratic administration, President Obama, said not a word because the way that they were rendered voteless, that is by transferring control from the people over their own institutions, but effectively to corporations, is Democratic policy as well as Republican policy. Now, I'm from New Jersey, and I went to schools in Jersey City, New Jersey, and that district was the first big city school district to be taken over in the country back in 1989. Now, there are hundreds of them, but you won't find a white one anywhere.
Oh, my gosh. How about also, I noticed one of the articles at Black Agenda Report that this issue of this simple issue of criminality. You know, we do read about disasters, you know, around the world. In China, they actually have capital punishment for they catch a banker with too much in his pocket that didn't belong to him. And when you have disasters in Italy, France, we've heard of people going to jail. I haven't heard anybody mention that this some kind of crime happened here, because the damage to the children is irreparable.
Yes, of course. And the damage to the children of Newark and Jersey City and New Orleans is also irreparable. It's not as dramatic as lead poisoning, but it is at least as destructive. It now afflicts millions and millions of kids. And who come from families that have no legal mechanism for recourse in terms of having any effect on the education of their children.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask you this, in light of all these matters, how do you view this presidential campaign and how it impacts on the struggle against racism in America? Bernie Sanders, who surprised a lot of people using the word socialist. People haven't heard that for a while. I think it was, who was it, Eugene Debs? And then, been a while. And
yeah.
And then, of course, Hillary Clinton, who her husband, people used to call him the first black president. I always thought somebody should be arrested for that. But anyway, can you talk about this campaign? It has some sort of shocking qualities. I guess I have to say word Trump. But anyway, what do you make of this?
Well, Bernie's success so far shows that the Republican and Democratic governments that have been in place in the United States are not delivering the goods that the American people, I'm talking about a mostly white constituency, want and think they deserve. The problem, of course, with Bernie is that he is a bucket with a hole in it, and all the contents will drain out to the advantage of the Democratic Party. I believe, I have absolute confidence that he's telling the truth, and he fully intends to back Hillary Clinton if he does not win the nomination. And that's nothing that a good socialist would do. The problem, and the real shame of it all is that if Bernie Sanders is to be denied the nomination, it will probably be because of the black vote in the South, which is still it still appears to be going in the main for Hillary. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason here. It seems strange that black folks who are, by any measure, and for as long as there have been polls taken of black folks in this country, have been shown to be the most left-leaning constituency in the country. So why should this left-leaning constituency be supporting this corporatist who, along with her husband, has a long record of anti-black and anti-poor people's political behavior? The reason is that in national elections, at least, too many black folks don't vote for the candidate that agrees with them in terms of his platform, or don't even go through the platform item by item, deciding whether the candidate agrees with them or not. But is looking for a Democratic candidate who will beat the Republican, that is, the representative of the white man's party. Mm-hmm. And so if you're looking for a protector, against the Republicans, against the white man's party, mm-hmm. you're really not going to have the same kind of criteria in supporting a candidate as you would if you were looking for someone who agrees with you. You're looking for a winner, and the only qualification that you're really concerned about is if that person can beat the Republican.
So they only play defense.
I think that kind of behavior will is likely to give us Hillary Clinton over a Bernie Sanders, whose politics are much closer to those of the average Black American.
Yeah, that's a grim picture. Although I guess it is encouraging, a challenge, isn't it, that we have somebody who's now declared socialist, who's actually got his name out there. But as you say, it'll unfortunately he waters it down because he says, "Well, I'm going to go with the party which belongs to Wall Street," which is takes the fun out of it.
Or nullifies the intent.
Yeah.
As Bruce Dixon, my partner in Black Agenda Report, says, Bernie Sanders still appears to be acting as the sheepdog who rounds up the stray lefties and delivers them to the party.
Yep, that was striking. But by the way, another thing, they did elect, of course, nominated and elected a Black candidate, Barack Obama. Did they have the policy, we did that once and they're not going to do it? I didn't hear a single Black name put up.
Well, they
have a 10-year rule? He can't run again for a while?
Barack Obama had been preparing himself for his entire life to be the favorite of white corporatists, the kind of Black man that they could trust. Mm-hmm. And he's an extremely talented guy. They won't find another like him.
So a short list of people they can trust.
Yeah.
Glenn Ford, it's a pleasure talking to you. The BlackAgendaReport.com, a terrific site, and we really appreciate all your comments today. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okie doke. Bye-bye. That's Glenn Ford, Executive Director of Black Agenda Report. And I'll tell you, this is the Taylor Report. And I'm going to do this again, facebook.com/The Taylor Report. And you can have this program and previous ones are available. We try to make it each Thursday. And tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock at the New Visions United Church in Hamilton, Zafar Ben-Gash and Phil Taylor, myself, are going to be talking about the crimes of empire and how the Middle East came to be the way it is today. And that's, again, 7 p.m., 24 Main Street, I believe, Hamilton West. And the other matters, I'll tell you again, Phil Conlon, who we often is with us, is unavailable today, but I hope you tune into his program each Wednesday at 6 p.m. It's classical underground. And on this, I guess in just the remaining moments, by the time we get together next week, there'll be the Super Bowl. So I'm going to tell you that there's a star that you want to make sure you support in the spirit of Black History Month, and that's Cam Newton, the quarterback of South Carolina. What is it? I wish I knew I follow football closely, but this, by the way, is a franchise that doesn't have a lot of success, but it's just, I want to call them South Carolina. It's the Panthers, Carolina Panthers. Now I know, I'm going to remember, think of marketing. They didn't want to say North Carolina, they didn't want to say South Carolina. They say Carolina, that way you get both of them, and you get anybody in the neighborhood. So Carolina Panthers. If you can now go to your sports section and find out that there is a discussion about racism in the NFL, and behold, yes, there is plenty of it. Cam Newton is a young and very successful black quarterback, and black quarterbacks are not the majority in the NFL. They make black players make up a very high percentage of the personnel in the National Football League, but the quarterback position, because that's a command position, has evolved should not say evolved, was it put in place, and it was a long battle to get a black quarterback as a starter. Canadians will know this because one of the greatest football players ever played in the Canadian Football League was Warren Moon of the Edmonton Eskimos. And he came to Canada because he knew that the prejudice against the black quarterback was such that he was unlikely to become a starting quarterback. He wasn't sure they would give him a chance. So he came here and he played. Actually, he had a career here before he went to the NFL. Then he had another career, which is how good he was. But there was a time when there were no black quarterbacks at all. And then they had the second phenomenon that when you did have one, he would be given a short leash. So if he went into the game, and if he didn't immediately perform in an excellent fashion, then they would take him off the field. I watched it happen once in a playoff game with the L.A. Rams. The L.A. Rams were one of the first to have a black quarterback. His name was Harris, and he had had a successful season. And they get into the playoffs. In the first quarter, he threw an interception, which is the big no-no. You don't throw an interception. And he didn't get back in the game. They took him off the field. And it's a similar situation with baseball where one of their baseball big shots one night opened his mouth and out came a monster when somebody asked him, why don't we have more black managers of baseball teams? And he said, oh, well, maybe they don't have the mental qualities. And everybody said, well, there's one fired commissioner. Now let's see if we can fix the problem. That just under the surface. Now, Mr. Newton's problem is that he's not intimidated by the circumstances around him, and he is his own person, and he likes to celebrate like a lot of ball players do. But if he celebrates in a way that doesn't please, frankly, a white prejudiced crowd, they start writing letters to the editor saying, let's get another quarterback, or someone has to tell him, which is, I'm sorry to say, just demonstrates a pathology. Brings us to Mr. Cam Newton, and I wish him well in this Super Bowl. And this is the Taylor Report. Hanny, thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.
No other genre of music has had such a profound impact on rock and roll like the blues has. A to Z Blues on CIU.